Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by two very special guests, Mr. Cliff Moten and Mr. Richard Vargas. Cliff, Rich, how are you?
Doing great today, Sean. How about yourself?
Doing fantastic. Wonderful. So, Cliff, why don't you give us a quick introduction about your role here and what we're going to be talking about today?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm Cliff Moten. I'm the manager of the solutions engineering team here at CIS, and we essentially help all of our wonderful CIS customers with these services that they're utilizing and help them along the way on their cybersecurity journey. Speaking of, we're going to talk a little bit about managed detection and response today, as well as our security operations center, which is why we've got the magnificent Rich Vargas here with us.
Absolutely. Rich, how about a quick introduction about yourself?
Awesome. Thank you very much, Sean, for having me. So I'm Rich Vargas. I am the SOC manager. I've been at CIS for going on 11 years, and I help oversee the SOC operations team as well as the hiring manager to ensure our staff is fully trained and up to date on the latest threats.
Wonderful. Thank you. So Cliff, let's start with you. Can we briefly explain the topics today, both SOC and MDR? Can you define those for our audience?
100%. Well, let's start, first of all, with getting all the letters out of the way, right? So SOC, the Security Operations Center, and MDR, Managed Detection and Response. And the easy way maybe of explaining SOC to some people would be to go to another thing called the TOC, the Technical Operations Center, right? So if you had a computer problem, you would call a Technical Operations Center. They'd be able to help you. Well, if you have a security problem, a security event, cybersecurity that is, you would call the Security Operations Center. So, of course, that's what Rich and his team is doing, is taking care of all those security events. And, of course, just like peanut butter and jelly, the SOC and MDR go right together because managed detection response is really about managing the detection of a cybersecurity event and someone responding to that. And, of course, the SOC, in this case, is who's actually doing all that.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Now, leading the SOC for 11 years, my goodness, Richard, that's absolutely fantastic that we've benefited from you being here doing all your phenomenal work. Is this, there are two very important elements, I think. One is response time and why that's so critical in terms of a metric for the SOC. And then really, what's the typical expectations of our SOC and our type of engagements today? So over to you, Rich.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to response time, I mean, the name of the game really is to react in the fastest way possible, especially when you're dealing with any type of malicious threat or something of a questionable nature that could result in a much more severe impact to an organization. So the way we help from the Security Operations Center side of the 24/7, 365 SOC, it rolls right off the tongue, I understand that, is we are really on high alert as much as we can, so that if there is an event that we look and say, hey, this is a very serious nature, and that we need to make sure that the members are notified as soon as possible, we do our part with some of the best in the industry in response times to ensure that you're getting not only the information, but all the context surrounding it, as well as additional next steps to take. And if those next steps result in capabilities that are outside of your current organization, we can provide additional services and additional support so that you are better prepared to respond to any type of malicious threat or really anything that could be affecting your organization.
Absolutely. And with so many members, I think that has evolved over time, Richard, to become really industry leading in response time and an ability to, one, understand the member, one, react in such a, you know, obviously this response time at this top level, taken a lot of time, a lot of practice, and really is starting to engage through our capability now. In terms of, well, one, obviously, the 11 years you've been here to address and lead that particular program to getting us to this point, is it's absolutely incredible that that is, you know, something that we can not only promote, but really stand behind, especially those services behind that fact. So it's not just a response time, but it's also an enablement for what we need to do to help you through when you see a response and that support. Absolutely fantastic. But Cliff, it now leads me to response time in the age of automation, AI. What's the differentiation that we're starting to see now and how that's changing in the industry?
Well, I think one of the things we have to kind of think about before we even talk about the response in today's age is the speed at which attackers can attack, you know, a network, right? A computer, you know, data, all of those fun things. Because, of course, attackers are using the same technology. They're using, you know, AI and, you know, some behavioral analysis and things like that to try to figure out when they can get into the network, how they can move between certain points. Of course, this takes that breakout time, which we've talked about over and over, from, you know, minutes, used to be hours, the whole way down to seconds. So with that said, of course, that means that response becomes the same, right? We need to be able to respond every bit as quick, if not quicker, than what the attacker can, right? So using artificial intelligence, using the behavioral analysis, and using some, you know, kind of automatic quarantining, things of that nature, that's how we're going to be able to respond to those things. And it's critical, right? Because every moment the attacker is in a system or moving between systems is another moment that data is being exfiltrated, data is being encrypted, something of that effect. So time is literally of the essence. And automation and these types of items like that are really the only way you can combat it, right? Humans just can't move that quickly. Except for me, of course.
Cliff, faster than AI. Absolutely. I completely agree. Completely agree, Cliff. Now, I think that leads us, though, because it's a really interesting point, is how we've had to necessarily invest in ourselves as an organization in order to respond to that. And so, Richard, from an operational perspective, when we're seeing, one, the response time, one, the velocity of both attack and really an ability that we've engaged in terms of investment, both staffing, the alert volume that we've got coming in, again, due to the massive expanse of membership and that data, that telemetry that we've got, and our tooling and integration of threat intelligence and other such sources, how has that affected our ability to, one, maintain those response times in the age of automation and AI?
So one thing you will notice, especially whenever you're looking at the grand scope of what we're monitoring not just one state or two, 10, 20, we're monitoring all 50 states as well as several US territories. And so with that comes an incredible dependency on not only the staffing, not only the amount of staff we have, but the quality of the staffing, and to ensure that they are once again trained up on the latest threats and how to go through their analysis process. And so we as the SOC are always trying to make sure that we have appropriate staffing levels. We have various reports and internal metrics so that we can ensure this is what we need to be at this specific level, so that not only are we better equipped to handle any events that come our way, but so we can provide even better service to our members as well. And what you can probably surmise from even just listening to that amount of data that is occurring is that we don't have an infinite number of cliffs in here to be able to help with all these various incidents or any other traffic or data that comes through of a potentially malicious nature. And so we have to utilize the power of automation. We've looked into the use of AI as well as any other ways to allow us to scale at a much more efficient rate. Because whether you're monitoring one agency or thousands of agencies, you want to make sure that everybody gets the same level of service, so that regardless if a major state, a local county, a power authority of any type is having any type of major issues, they're getting the exact same service regardless of what time or day that it is happening as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think, you know, it really leads us down that path. And Cliff, it also leads me into thoughts of MDR and utilizing those types of solutions as another element of telemetry in our ability to, one, respond, utilize both the intelligence from those platforms in order to inform and really create a true infrastructure of both protection, detection, and response. And it really is, you know, helping us build up a capability to address, you know, threats across many, many different vectors. And I think that's another, you know, unique solution, as it were, really, that I only see through MSSPs. Right. And how we're now really aligned to, one, not only in that industry, but across many different parentheticals, where we, one, have both an understanding and contextual relationship with the membership to, in order to inform a response, but also to meet them where they are, right? The name of the podcast. And we're able to help them through whether it's, you know, there's no services whatsoever need to provide that 24/7/365, or whether there's maturation in that space, there's still solution, still capability that one, we're contributing to that maturity over time. But it leads me, Cliff, to, you know, another point where you've seen or any, you know, thoughts or use cases where response time truly makes a difference. And you touched on it previously in terms of, you know, that dwell time, the reaction time. It's, you know, that's another file encrypted, another file exfiltrated. Any use cases or examples that come to mind in that space?
Oh, my goodness, Sean, I can think of some personal experiences in the past that I don't even want to think about. They give me nightmares. But I mean, I've spoken just as my team has with many customers about these things. And thank goodness for Rich and his team, because I've heard over and over these types of stories where they've essentially, you know, saved their bacon, right? The probably the most relatable thing is, you know, malware. Those viruses that people get, they start encrypting files and literally can spread across a network like wildfire and cause just weeks and weeks and weeks of downtime, quite frankly. I personally have dealt with this in the past where someone in an organization I once worked at, they got one of these viruses, right? And everybody leaves for the weekend. It was literally like we had narrowed it down. It was Saturday night, like 11:35 p.m. or something crazy like that, that this thing goes out and literally just starts encrypting files. And of course, this user had access to a lot of shares on a lot of the SANs on that network, and it started encrypting all of those files. And nobody knew about this until about 7:30 a.m. when all of the support people arrived back at that organization, and they couldn't get into anything. They couldn't get into any files whatsoever because that had just run rampant all weekend long, just encrypting everything on the network. We were fortunate in terms of having air gap backups and stuff, and you know, we sustained only a couple of days of downtime. But I mean, you know, you think about it, you're a public utility, a day of downtime, even an hour of downtime, you know, you don't have electricity, you don't have natural gas, you know, things of this nature. These are really, really important things. So this is where that response comes in. And I've spoken to so many customers that have said, hey, I came in on Monday morning and I had voicemails from the SOC and everything. I had emails from the SOC and I just ignored them over the weekend because I knew everything was okay. And this computer was sitting there, you know, kind of self-contained. It was encrypted, but of course, the rest of the network wasn't. So, I mean, that's like the easiest, most relatable thing I can think of. And of course, it didn't cost, you know, potentially millions of dollars to get files unlocked, or days and days and days of time and resources that, quite frankly, a lot of people just don't have.
No, you're 100%, Cliff. I mean, there's so many stories now, right? I mean, it's kind of a dealer's choice when we're thinking of examples, right? And it leads us, and Rich, obviously, you know, you're at the front line of all of these, and I can only imagine the stories that you've heard. But one of the things, and Cliff, I don't know if you see this, but whenever I'm at a conference, let's RSA, for example, I've got people coming up. This was the worst time. You guys were there. You helped. We're so thankful for you and everything that you do. And again, that just makes you smile, right? I mean, that is what it's all about. And I don't know if you get that, Cliff, as well.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I even get that out when I'm just out and about in the public, and you know, you'll meet a new person, you start talking to them, and then they go, oh my goodness, you guys helped us at one point. I remember it at our office at, you know, this particular place, you know, an educational institute or whatnot, where we had this big problem. And that was you guys. That was Center for Internet Security that helped us. And that was not me, but that was Rich and his team. And, you know, of course, Rob and the team at the CERT and everything, they're like, yeah, we could have been in a lot of trouble. We would have been down for weeks. And they weren't, because of course they had that help. And it's very heartwarming to hear that, you know, we as an organization are superheroes, right?
Absolutely. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back to talk to Rich, our current superhero on this podcast, about threat intelligence. We'll be right back.
Are you a U.S. state, local, tribal, or territorial government?
If so, you know just how difficult cyber defense can get.
You're the frontline defense against cyber threats, yet you don't have the shiny tools, big budget, or skilled talent of an enterprise.
Well, guess what? You don't need them.
You do need a community of like-minded folks to unlock the power of collective cybersecurity.
And that's the superpower of the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center.
The Multi-State ISAC provides cyber underserved organizations with protections they otherwise couldn't afford at a price that works for them.
But it's more than just access to services. It's access to a community of peers where your participation protects them and theirs protects you.
Not to mention access to the 24/7/365 CIS Security Operations Center as your full-time public sector cybersecurity partner.
Available as a single organization or state or territory-wide option, the MSISAC membership provides threat intelligence, monitoring, and more to fortify your cyber defense.
Become a member today by visiting cisecurity.org/ms-isac.
Okay, we're back. So, Rich, you know, hearing this from both the public, and obviously I'm sure you've experienced it, is it's awesome, right? You know, the service that both you provide, have curated over time, and now manage at this phenomenal level, it's going to make you feel good, right?
It absolutely does. You know, it's one thing to work for a cybersecurity company that kind of just does a set list of tasks, and you're really not making a difference, you feel like, at the end of the day. But, you know, in our case, we're not just dealing with people who have fully prepared or fully mapped out organizations and security posture and everything they need to, you know, protect their organization. We're dealing with underfunded school districts. We're dealing with underfunded state governments. We're dealing with underfunded local counties who are looking to somebody to provide any resource, whether it is just a notification saying, hey, you should be aware of the latest threats that could be impacting your organization or organizations like yours, to here is a tailored notification that gives you immediate steps and what actions to take to protect yourself from anything of a more severe impact. And so it's a very satisfying position to be in terms of being able to help as many entities and as many individuals as possible, because it goes really beyond the cybersecurity aspect. It goes into almost a humanitarian sense when you're dealing with even places like hospitals as well, where there are, you know, not to Hollywood this anymore, but when there could be potential lives at stake, we're able to provide the assistance that hopefully does prevent a much more severe impact.
100%. You know, as we also think operationally, Rich, threat intelligence, right? Phenomenal team, getting a lot of telemetry, a lot of elements that assist our capability. How is that important in terms of both, well, really accelerating response time, but both getting that enriched telemetry so it really makes you more informed in terms of providing our services?
So when you think about receiving any type of useful information, this is even just from the cybersecurity side, when you're getting information to help make a decision as to what you are doing for any type of business related, you know, activity, it helps to have additional context along with it. It's one thing for me to give you, here is an IP address that is bad, go do something about it, and not really giving a lot to, here is the IP address, here is the type of behavior it's been associated with, here are ports that are commonly associated with this type of attack, and this is where we may see from your organization could be impacted. That provides way more wealth for an organization, provides way more for our state and local governments and our entities and partners to say, okay, we are getting this information and now I know exactly what steps to take. Now, to not be unfair on either side of this, we can't always provide the complete information because a lot of it is happening almost in near real time. But the moment we're able to get that additional information, especially from a threat intelligence perspective, that is so much more helpful and assist a number of various organizations and all the different of our membership who we have as part of the MSISAC umbrella. It gives so much better benefit. I'm running out of really positive words to say in this instance because there's just so much to go over from all those different perspectives, really, at this point.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I like you say, the contextual element of forming that is so important because really it comes to just a data point, respectfully. I think it takes that time, that curation in order to understand its impact and then really disseminating that. So one, it's both detected and prevented, but also an awareness element that we can share with a larger community. Absolutely fantastic. Now, Cliff, we'll move into some of the technology, some of the innovation, some of the strategy that we've been talking about and working on here. One element is security, orchestration, automation, and response, or SOAR, elements. How does that play into impacting response time?
Well, you know, it's kind of what we were talking about a little bit earlier in terms of some of that automated response, right? When you have all this data coming into to your SIEM, right? And just all these logs. And of course, like Rich said, you just can't have enough superheroes to be able to review all of that, right? So you've got to start doing some analysis on that. Well, just like he mentioned in terms of like, here's a bad IP address, what do I do with that? It's the same situation, right? So we have this data now and we can see things that are happening, but what do we do with it? And that's where that SOAR piece comes in, because now you can actually have playbooks. You can have kind of things planned out. You can have automated responses so that whenever something happens, it's triggered, immediately another action happens. So maybe in the instance of MDR, maybe we're actually locking down that endpoint, right? So that something cannot escape that particular endpoint. Maybe in the instance of our Albert intrusion detection system, it's the difference between making a phone call or sending an email based on the type of threat it is, and getting a hold of those customers and be able to walk through with them on anything that needs to be done for that investigation. So it really, again, it comes down to speed, right? To automating so that you can be as quick as possible, because of course attackers, they're moving as quick as they can possibly move, and they're using all these same tools. And as much as I don't want to say this, sometimes a lot better tools than what the industry is using, because a lot of times they're developing because they've got a huge amount to gain from these things and from getting this data. And they know that the industry has a lot to gain from stopping them, right?
You know, 100%. And again, I think it's the attacker and defender dilemma. One, the attacker has specific targets, right? Can focus. And from a defender perspective, it's
they've got the upper hand.
They sure do.
They really have the upper hand. We are all trying to figure out what they're trying to get out of us. They know what they want.
Exactly. And we're trying to defend everything else in case that's the avenue of attack or the vector that they'll use. Absolutely. Now, Rich, speaking of the SOAR technology stack, how does that one operationalize bring new capability to you and your team? And how do you see it impacting response time?
Yeah, I mean, the name of the game with impacting response time is to reduce the response time itself. And so we touched on previously about the power of automation, and so that it's able to take what would normally be almost an impossible task into a more scalable solution. And so having, just as Cliff was saying about playbooks, or having specific set actions to take that can help reduce the impact. The ideal situation is that you're never impacted by a malicious threat, but nothing is ever 100% secure really in that instance. And so the next logical step at that point is, okay, if we are impacted, how can we reduce the time it takes to recover from being impacted in those areas? And so with something like the use of an effective SOAR product or a SOAR platform, it does help drive that response time down by having a specific set of actions that can be taken based off whatever threat is being observed. And for in this case, if there is, say, a ransomware infection, one of the biggest malicious indicators of that is outbound traffic, rather, I should say, across your network, and the idea that things are now starting to be encrypted, malicious activity is now spreading. If you're able to cut that spread almost instantly, that is so much less of a recovery effort that you have to put in so that you aren't affected by that. And that, again, is driven by the reduced response time that you have for those types of threats.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think, you know, one of the other vectors I see, and I'd love to get both of your thoughts on this, is when we can bring automated capability to respond, there's certain events that we know would have been a manual task, now can be automated. That gives us more time to focus on new advanced threat capability, ingestion of threat intelligence, and really then trying to build newer playbooks, as it were, for the SOAR to take on that role as well. Cliff, do you agree with that?
Oh, 100%. You know, it kind of gets to a conversation that's just happening all over the industry. Everybody talks about, oh, automation, and now, you know, this person won't have a job or that person won't have a job, which is totally not true. This automation, as exactly what you're saying, is taking these tasks that can be automated, that are kind of, it's not that they're not important, but they're kind of minute, right? Take those tasks, offload them like that, and now not only do all the analysts have more time to study and learn more and become better, but now they can dive into things that otherwise they would have never had time for. So, you know, I talk a lot about behavioral analysis, but, you know, you can only go so far with that machine learning piece. You know, having that human element to review that stuff, makes a huge difference. That's where I think personally that the CIS SOC is so important, is because while you have all of these really great things going on with the technology, you still need some human eyes on there for a different perspective. And literally, it just frees up your individuals, your staffing, to be able to do those things that otherwise they would never have had time for. And even more so when it comes to the customer, right? Because they certainly don't have the staffing or the time.
No, agreed. And, you know, Rich, I'd love to get your thoughts, because I think it also then leads into another capability of the SOC being better trained, more aware, able to adapt and utilize these tools, not only for improving the service, but really improving the SOC itself. Is that something you've seen with the SOC capability?
So we do that almost in a sense for our membership in terms of reducing the overall workload. So because we are a managed security solution or managed security service, we handle a lot of the raw amount of events that'll trigger from an organization. I've seen as many as 7 to 10,000 a month. And if you think of a lot of, again, those underfunded organizations trying to go through tens of thousands of alerts from just one by one without any type of additional assistance from any type of automation or any platform to help kind of drill those down to more effective quality, you can imagine how overrun they would be immediately without us being able to step in and say, allow us to trim this down and give you the alerts that we feel are something you should be investigating quickly. Now, we do, again, our best to monitor for all the various types of threats out there. And with that type of monitoring, we, again, will make sure that our members will receive the, what we feel, incidents that are more important to them. There is no such platform that is 100% false positive free. And so we make sure we do our part to say, okay, these types of incidents, these types of alerts that we don't see any type of malicious nature on, and we've kind of gone through our own due diligence from our analysis process, you guys don't need to worry about that. Now, here are other incidents that we have seen affecting your organization that you should be looking into immediately. That happens with our Albert monitoring service. That happens with our CrowdStrike Falcon service, as well as our workmen with Accenture as well. So all those various services where there are incidents and notifications being sent to your organization, they are already being trimmed down through our own tools and our own platforms that we utilize, so that, again, you are getting that information so you can focus on the quality and not quantity of those types of incidents.
I love that. That's a great way to put it as well, because it not only does it give you the time to focus, but on the right things, because you can go down, and I'm sure, you know, we all can go follow this path, but we've been down rabbit holes, and it's literally got nothing from that. Why did I, you know, go down this path? And getting that contextualized, getting the telemetry that is important, allowing us to get to that net positive response. Absolutely fantastic. It's a great way to put it, Richard. Really good. So Richard, last question for you. And I just want to get your thoughts, because when we talk about velocity, in some cases, some may say, well, in order to reach that type of response time, something has to be sacrificed. And, you know, we could say quality, so compromising quality in the space. What are some of the best practices that you've built, used, that you can relate to MSSPs or security monitoring organizations that would allow them not only to adopt this reduced response time, but not compromise quality either?
So I think one of the first things that an organization should do is determine their priorities. And so understanding where you fit in an industry, understanding, are you something that could be seen as a high value target? When you look at something like hospitals or school districts, something that also could be falling under critical infrastructure, you understand that there is always going to be a much bigger target on your back. And so as a result, you have to be able to prioritize, again, what is most important for your organization. A lot of people will look at a vendor and the tools that it offers and says, well, that's the newest and latest and greatest, let's just go with that, but not realizing that it's probably not the best fit for their organization. If you are monitoring not even more than a dozen endpoints, you're probably not going to need to get a commercial high-end product that is capable of 10 to 20,000 licenses at any given time, because you're now going above your capabilities at that point. You also need to figure out, okay, based off of the information, what is going to be most useful for not only our organization, but the team of engineers, the cybersecurity analysts, of all the various folks in your own operation centers, that they're going to say, this is information that is important to me. And a lot of times when you determine that, it comes from speaking to those analysts individually, speaking to them directly, making the decisions that are not just about, well, what would I like to see? If you're not on the front lines, you need to know what the frontline people want to see. You want to ask them and say, okay, what information is going to be best for your organization? And then based off those responses, based off those actions, you then can put together that list of what you're looking for, your must-haves, your nice-to-haves, as well as determining other factors too. Budgeting is something that you really can't predict depending on, you know, how a year goes. If you are answering to a higher authority on any type of budgeting, that is an obstacle that does affect a lot of organizations, including ones we monitor directly. We have a number of great monitoring services and a number of different platforms that members have wanted to ask, hey, how can we implement that for our organization, almost on a first party basis? And they are limited in some forms. So if they try to take those on their own, they can't, whether it's budgeting, whether it's staffing, like you mentioned before. And so, again, trying to figure out where those priorities are, what your capabilities are, and working off that list to result in a better selection of products that you'll be using. It's not always about the latest and greatest. It's also about the ones that are most important, that are the best fit for your organization or for your company.
Exactly right. Exactly. And I think, Cliff, that's where the investment comes in, right? This is not just, oh, AI is the next new thing. We've got to do something in that space. It's always done with a purpose, always done with really our stakeholders in mind, that we're going to advance, we're going to innovate, we're going to bring new capability for the right reasons. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, Rich brings up a great point when he talks about the priorities and the capabilities. You know, you as an organization need to understand, you know, what your attack surface is, right? To an extent, you're never going to get everything right. But you also need to understand, what is the most prevalent attack for me, right? If you're an education type of an organization, totally different type of threats for you than if you're an elections organization, or if you're a water plant, or if you're a power plant. So you need to understand also what it is that you're protecting, right? Also, and there's a lot of great things out there, such as the CIS critical controls, you know, where you can do that basic cyber hygiene. And then of course the CIS benchmarks, the actual technical implementations of those. And those things are actually mapped to MITRE ATT&CK framework. So if you've gone through incident response before, and you know that you are very prone to these malware type of attacks, you can map all that stuff back through and figure out, okay, here's the things I need to do to secure these systems. Here are the services I may need. Here are the things I may need from a SOC, right? And you can kind of map yourself out to take care of that and prioritize in that type of a way. And then, of course, as Rich said, get the appropriate capabilities for your organization.
100%. Yeah. Now, again, a lot of excellent commentary here. And really, again, Cliff, Richard, it's so great to have you on the podcast, that, you know, give your perspectives and really all you do for the organization and our stakeholders. Absolutely great work. And again, congratulations and really thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And to our audience, thank you. We really appreciate you listening in. Make sure to subscribe in all the usual ways to your preferred podcast provider. Catch us on YouTube at DCI Security. Questions, comments, concerns, podcast@cisecurity.org. And make sure to tune in every Wednesday for episodes like this and much, much more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.